Reading from the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. Chapter 2, text 39. Aparigriha Narye Janma Patanta Shambodha. When refrainment from covetousness becomes firmly established, knowledge of the whys and wherefores of birth manifests. Om Jnana Dimanandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Raksulin Mulatam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Maha Vancha Kalpa Tanubhyascha Kripa Shindu Vaibhaja Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadeva Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ramo, Hare Ramo, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Hare. So greetings from Vrindavan. I arrived yesterday from a very fruitful pilgrimage to Sridhar Mayapur and to Jagannath Puri Dham. It was really wonderful, beyond my expectations. Everything was ideal. I also, you know, I have a particular standard of how festivals and yatras should be run, and it certainly met that standard in all aspects. It was just tremendous. And for some of you that were on the Sangha on Sunday, may have heard one of the lectures, quite a special lecture by Srila Parthasarathy Maharaj, very good friend of mine, who, due to weak health, usually doesn't, and his own internal life, especially when he's in India, you don't see him much, but he came every night, and really shared with us some of his realizations. That was really, really wonderful. That was also quite nice. I couldn't give class myself because in the hotel we stayed, the only place I could get cell phone reception was in the corner where he was sitting. Somehow I did get some feedback that it was loud and clear, and I'm very happy about that. Now I'm in Vrindavan, I'm pretty much set up. I have pretty good reception. Only problem is I don't have electricity, but the chowkidar, he promised to come at 8, turn it on, just to make sure that we have enough electricity, and my phone battery is not very good. So we've been studying the practice of bringing oneself to the point of meditative absorption. Yoga works at a certain level of concentration. This yoga is to meditate on an object which purifies the mind, but you have to be able to meditate on the object. It's an advanced stage. So you discuss Kriya Yoga, and then unconsciously it was kind of collecting this information from the traditions as they exist at his time. Also mentions an eightfold process, which known as Ashtanga Yoga, very popularly known now, actually, and discusses how this is also a very good process to bring one's, control one's mind and bring one to the stage where one can actually meditate. And it was described in terms of eight limbs. There's moral restraint, there's moral observances, there's posture, there's breathing, there's renunciation, and then there's three stages of progressive and deepening meditation. So we're in the section that is describing first the yams and the niyams. The yams, the moral restraints, how you deal with others. And the core dealing is not to be exploitive. That's the source of the consciousness being directed externally. It's for the competitive, dominating urge. That's why our senses in this world are projected externally, and why they're meditating on the thoughts that are arising in the mind and fostering this misidentification with the body. So, ahimsa, nonviolence, truthfulness, not to steal or covet another person's possessions, to be celibate, and to refrain from unnecessary acquisition of unnecessary things. And these vows, they're universal. It doesn't matter on the place, the time, the circumstances, the class, your social status. Then he discusses niyam, the moral observances, how you deal with yourself, cleanliness, contentment. Contentment means enough. What God gives me is enough. Then austerity, then study, and then worship of God. And of course, this is some stress or emphasis is based on this because God is controlling everything. So the petition to God and the sacrifice to God gives you a power beyond your own individual efforts. And then there was a description on how to control the negative thoughts. And the negative thoughts are the thoughts that go against cleanliness, contentment, austerity, study, worship of God, nonviolence, truthfulness, what goes against these things. And it was a nice description of this type of spiritual programming where you consciously can cultivate counteracting thoughts. Perhaps if you're attached to illicit sex life, then when those thoughts arise, which will bring the consciousness external away from yoga, one's struggling with that, he consciously begins to meditate on the entanglement of that activity, the sinful reactions of that activity, maybe the diseases that are connected with that activity, just to counteract that. And that can be done with any of the yams and the yams. You have to have a spiritual goal. We have to understand what's the benefit of that spiritual goal. And we have to be conscious to keep that in our minds. And we have to understand the things that bring us away from our spiritual goal and the result of those activities. The mind is so tricky. Mind rationalizes. The intelligence serves the false conceptions if the desires are very strong. And you can watch your mind as you're doing something wrong that you should not be doing, even though you're conscious of it at the time, the mind just pushes away any other thing. So we have to be trained in this way. And now we're in the section of the Yoga Sutras where it discusses the benefits that come which is another counteracting thought. When you're thinking of negative or violent thoughts that go against the yams and niyams, one way to counteract it is to think of the benefit you get from restraining these negative thoughts. And the restraint of the negative thoughts is called the yams, it's called the niyams. You can think of the benefit. So, to briefly get us up to where we are, if you can cultivate nonviolence or counteract violence by nonviolence, then enmity is abandoned, the mind becomes so peaceful and sattvic that it pervades out and counteracts the ignorance and passion and aggressive tendencies based on that ignorance and passion of others. It stimulates their own sattvic potential, even in the natural enemies in the animal kingdom. Feel the sattvic influence of the saintly person who is nonviolent. It's so wonderful, nonviolence, to not think ill of others, not to be in a state of defensiveness. What wonderful influence that has on others. And truthfulness ensures the fruition of actions. Some commentators discuss this as the infallibility of one's words. When a person is virtuous, and then what they say must be true. They're very careful what they say, but it must be true. It has a potency or shakti, it has an influence on people. And therefore, the yogi who is truthful, his desire is that others become truthful. And therefore, when one sees the beauty of truth manifest in a person, it not only has a power to positively affect someone, but in itself, but it allures someone to higher states of consciousness. Non-stealing, non-covetousness. When one is established, refraining from stealing, all jewels manifest. Commentators don't say much, but whether you take that literally or not, that's a question of discussion of other commentators who just describe the glow of detachment and indifference radiates in the countenance of a saintly person, a yogi, who doesn't have that desire to, you can feel it in the person when he's detached. He has a higher pleasure internally, and the strength of his understanding is so powerful, that radiant person, who dira dira janapriyo piyakaro namatsuno, who's non-envious. becomes dear to everyone, and because he becomes dear to everyone, and because people trust him so much, people naturally, out of devotion and love, want to feel honored to give that person valued things, understanding that that person will use those valued things for a good cause. Fundraising, collecting is best done when the person who is raising funds has no personal attachment. Because then people are naturally inclined to give that person, because they realize that that person will do good. And celibacy gives one great power. It gives him vitality, potency, allows one to achieve their goals. Especially it's powerful in imparting knowledge. The words of a person who is truly celibate in body and mind, the conviction, the words go deep, and such a teacher, once such a person can become a teacher, a guru, his words will have potency. The power of celibacy, it's a physiological thing. Ojas is a subtle vital energy of substance that forms the other substances in the body called dhatu. And with that, along with that prana, it controls the life functions. And therefore, when one is celibate, the body and immune system becomes nourished by the semen. When one is not, it becomes deprived of these vital substances. And there are many stories in the Shastras proclaiming, and it's actually a fact, it's very powerful. When refrainment from covetousness becomes firmly established, when you actually become renounced of all unnecessary possessions, not just physically renounced, but you're actually indifferent towards them, then knowledge of the whys and wherefores of birth manifests. You know what were in the past, and you'll know where you go in the future. This is obvious cause and effect. What you are now is a result of what you were in the past. So if you have a clear vision of what you are now, then you'll know what you were in the past. And if you have a clear vision of what you know now, then you can understand the cause of it. And you'll also understand what you are now itself is the cause of the future and where you'll go by. So a yogi attains this because when one is detached from unnecessary possessions, the mind becomes extremely clear. And when you're detached, when awareness is not dissipated externally, it gets channeled internally, and it can see into the chitta very clearly the imprints that were caused by past life. The analogy is given here is very nice. It's just like there's no pebbles in the pond, and the pond is still, then you can see clearly your reflection within that pond. So when the mind is clear, because you're very detached, and your awareness is not being projected constantly externally, It becomes a clarity of the mind that enables you to understand yourself to the degree that you can see clearly the mental inference in your chitta caused by your last life, and therefore you can understand what you were doing in your last life. And you can understand by the imprints that have been there put in this life and the imprints that have been reinforced by your past life where you're going in the future also. So, and one modern commentator says, when one becomes so attracted by that level of detachment, and any others become very, very interested in you. Now, cleanliness, this is now, we're discussing the Vyaks. We discussed the results of the Yamas, and what's the results of the Niyams? Well, when cleanliness develops, then the result is you get a distaste for one's body and the cessation of contact with others. In other words, when you add cleanliness is external and internal, and when that is perfected, not in a OCD manner, not just a psychological matter, obsessive compulsive matter, but in terms of one's true vision of the temporal and impure state of matter and the eternal and pure state of soul. And when one can discern that clearly, and therefore, in the pursuit of understanding the soul, manifests a internal and external environment of goodness, one naturally develops a distaste, jugupsa, for the defects of the body. Because when you're engaged in cleanliness, and you can see this, if someone's a real Brahmin, he just doesn't like dirt because it's ignorance, and he wants to keep in goodness. Therefore, Brahmins were always cleaning. You know, I once went to many, 20, 25 years ago with Yasomati Nandana Prabhu, who's ISKCON is the in charge of Gujarat, to his mother's home. And they lived in a Brahmin neighborhood, but, you know, people who really practiced. And I've never seen, it was very simple, I've never seen a place so simple and pure. I've never seen a place so simple and pure. Come in. One second. Yeah. Okay. Okay. I know. How can you even come in the front door? Hold on. It's open. It's open. Just one second. I'll be right here. Okay. I'll be right with you here. So I guess you'll just be in the another program for that. Is that your thing?
Yeah, they have to
Yeah, that's great too. Okay, then I'll see you maybe for class. Okay, thanks for coming. What time is the class? I'll be a little late. What? Yeah, okay. So when you're constantly cleaning, you become more and more aware of the nature of the body. which the yogi desires to free the soul from. And in this awareness, then how, Vyas says, can a yogi engage in intimate contact with the bodies of others, which might even be less clean? So this is the result that the attraction for the opposite sex evaporates for someone who perfects this, really in a real brahminical way, perfects cleanliness. It actually reduces sex desire and the by the contemplations of the nature of the body. Cleansing the body, this is Professor Bryant. Essentially, it consists of wiping away sweat, urine, feces, mucus, and other discharges and substances, which in and of themselves are not erotic, but obnoxious. By meditating the realities of the act of cleanliness, the yogi ceases to see the body as an erotic object. One is thus freed from the oppressive and ultimately disappointing pressures of erotic illusion and fantasy. And then one story is given. It's also a story that Srila Prabhupada has often given also, called Liquid Beauty, where there's different ways of telling it, but where there's a king who becomes thirsty after hunting, and he goes to hermitage, and in that hermitage, there's a beautiful young maiden who's been raised as a fully enlightened yogini. So she has no desire for sex. But him overcome the desire, he propositions her, and she, and showing compassion for the lusty king, made a request him to return within a month, where she says, I'll allow you to enjoy my body. And during the period where he goes away, the maiden does a kind of punch karma with laxatives and purges and collects all the stuff that comes out of her in a bottle. And when he comes back, King returns. He's greeted by the maiden who's wasted and just a shadow of her previous beauty. Upon asking her what has become of her beauty, she presents the king these earthen pots and enlightens him with the reality of the body, and as say here, the foolishness of bodily identification and the superficial reality of bodily attraction. This is also mentioned nicely in the purport. I think it's Professor Bryant's, but just think what a person has to do to become a sexual object, an enticing object. The cleaning, the decorating, the pruning of the hair, taking care of the natural odors with artificial scents. So the yogi sees through this. The gases, everything that come out of the body have to be controlled. The yogi sees through this, and therefore it ceases to see other bodies as erotic objects. Hari Harinanda notices animals express their love for each other by licking their bodies. Indeed, just as animals are aroused by sniffing each other's excrement, which in most human beings would consider to be unclean and distasteful, human in turn engage in other types of expression of sensual bodily intimacy, which in a parallel fashion are seen by the yogi as unclean and distasteful. And there's also a nice comment here about radical ascetics who smear their bodies with unwanted substances, meditate in cremation grounds, etc., to help realize the nature of the body. I believe even in the enunciate sects of Christianity. They have rooms of skeletons, etc., just to inspire one with the true nature of what is the body, to help them detach oneself. Of course, we're not recommended to be so radical, but the point is being expressed in line with the enlightened being of Bhagavad Gita. He sees everything as equally on the material platform. And of course, the Shastras have the example of other dukes who, desiring to not be attractive, knowing they make themselves a subject of scorn and abuse, so they're rejected by society and they're left alone for their meditation. Had the story of Bart Maharaj, who attained a very, very high level of realization, but became distracted in his meditation by compassion for a deer, and then chasing the deer, died, and then took two more births, one as a deer and one as a Brahmin. But because he so much did not want to get allured again into this world, he acted as if he was Jada Bar. It's something called Abadut, to socially pose oneself as unwanted. They're not mainstream, but there's some defense of them on a theological platform. By virtue of the practitioners, ability, a desire to give up basic civilized notions of personal personal behavior in an intense quest for the eternal. Quest for the eternal. And quest for the goals of yoga. So this is the benefit of wiping away and cleaning all the substances, and externally and internally, if you cultivate purity, that's the next verse upon the purification of the mind, one cheerfulness, one pointness, sense control, fitness to perceive the self, all auspiciousness comes when one I'm okay now, okay? No need to start it. I still have electricity, okay? I'll call you if I need it. Those are some of the benefits of that. That's all I prepared today. I kind of went quicker than I thought, so it will leave time for questions. Also, it is Nityananda's appearance day here today, and there are classes in the temple that perhaps I'll attend. Probably won't start right now, so we have some time. Would anyone like to ask a question? Okay, if there's no questions, would anyone like to say hello? I know Amiya is there. She said at the beginning. Anyone else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Govardhan.
Hare Krishna, Govardhan. great every week. I appreciate that so much.
Gail here, Maharaj. Hare Krishna.
Who's that?
This is Gail.
Who's that?
Gail.
Gail, Gail, I know who you are. You don't have any questions, huh?
Not today, Maharaj.
I have a question for you then.
Okay.
I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear, were you on the Sunday Sangha?
Well, it depends upon why you're asking.
What?
I said it depends upon why you're asking.
Because it was the most beautiful guitar, the kind of guitar you would, I think, desire to hear.
Okay,
so
then yes, I was there. Yes, I was there. I was there.
Were you able to hear clearly?
Yes, I was.
Okay. Thank you, Gail. It was really beautiful and blurry. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello? While I'm waiting, another very nice thing of being these pilgrimages, I meet people on the Sangha and people who are listening to these lectures that I didn't even know. Many people are listening to the lectures, even if there's a limited amount that actually can call them live. I'm meeting from all over the world people who are all the lectures. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, I'm going to go to the class by His Grace Puri Jam Prabhu and His Holiness Veer Krishna Maharaj. Okay, happy Nityananda's appearance day. We'll see you all next week. Hare Krishna. Bunch of help for you.